Previously on X-Men.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude, your pop culture and comic book podcast, coming to you from the megacity metropolis of Toronto. I'm your host, Eric Anthony, and you are tuned in for another episode of The Road Report, where I attempt to make my way to work safe and sound while podcasting to you, the people, at the same time driving on the main highways of the greater Toronto area, from main city of Toronto to the outskirts of it. And I gotta say, for this particular episode of The Road Report, I decided to do something a little different. I arrived to work instead, safe and sound, instead of trying to podcast while driving at the same time, because these last couple of days I've been attempting to record this particular episode, and it's been interrupted by crazy things happening on the road. And I said, you know what? The podcast isn't quite as important as my life. And if I told you some of the things that were happening, you would believe me if you live in Toronto. But then there'd be some stuff you'd be like, "What? Really?" And I said, I gotta just make sure my car is parked safe and sound. And for this episode, as opposed to other ones, I will be using my phone for references. Because usually when I do these road reports, it's a stream of consciousness. There's no way to really edit myself. I just say whatever comes to me, first take, if you will. Not quite, but I do my best, and I get facts wrong from time to time. And I always warn the listener, if this is your first time, I may get my facts wrong because I don't have any point of reference. So for this episode, I will have a point of reference, and we will once again be talking about the X-Men as we take our nostalgic journey down Gray Malkin memory lane and visit another main event in X-Men mythology. This one now is going to be the big one, Inferno. Now, I know the one that I'm building up to finally get to is the Fatal Attractions. I don't know why that's my stopping point, but that's the one I want to eventually have read everything in between and get to that point where you get the big moment of Magneto versus Wolverine. But as I've been reading these X-Men stories and going way back to Mutant Massacre and reading everything from there onwards, I've really enjoyed all of the different stories that I had never read before, that I kind of, you know, dusted under the rug because I didn't think, that's just another X-Men story. It's just another crossover. It's just another thing. It'd be too much to read. But it's been a lot of fun, and I've read and learned a lot of different, read and learned about a lot of different characters, enjoyed a lot of different storylines, some not so much, some more than others. But this one here was one that I definitely was ignoring over the last couple years, because I'm not a big fan of the whole, as you'll see, there's a lot of, you know, demon characters in this storyline. But as I'm reading this book and I'm getting to the moments leading up to this, I definitely want to read what's happening to some of these characters, because this is kind of the culmination of buildup of X-Men storyline from, I would say, issue since the moment that Madeline Pryor is introduced into the X-Men, this story has been building up. And I feel like they stick the landing with this particular story. And we'll get into it now. But first, I want to talk about how this book is, how you can read it. What's the best way if you want to read this storyline that I'm kind of building up to be something maybe better than what it is? Where can you find it? Well, there's so much included in this book that at one point in time, I don't know if they are officially, but at one point in time, they had three volumes, omnibus-worthy volumes, of hardcover collected issues covering this event, whether it's a prologue to Inferno, the main Inferno event, or all of the issues within the Marvel Universe that crossed over or were affected by the Inferno event. There's three omnibuses worthy. And that's, I think, a little bit too much to say that's what you got to read to get this event. There were also two softcover trade paperbacks that collected what I think is in the main storyline. But then that was out of print, so I couldn't really find that or order that from Amazon or at my comic book shop or easy to find at even secondhand bookstores. So I ended up going with the Milestone version. And if you've happened to listen to the Comic Shenanigans podcast with Adam Chapman, where me and Adam go through those seasonal catalogs that are letting us know everything that's coming out for Marvel in the next couple of months. We have a couple of those episodes on his podcast. I've been critical of the Milestone collections simply because it seems like another way for Marvel to get people to throw out or to trade in or to do whatever with their old copies of their collections and put another thing on their shelf that is going to have now a very uniformed looking trade dress and spine. So you put on your, because people like myself are crazy and we love seeing that uniformity when we collect our things. So this to me was just another way for Marvel to put out collections in this format. I say all that to say this. I had to buy one of those Milestone collections because it was the only place that I could, other than if I wanted to get them in single issue, it was the only place for me to read this story in its completion. And I have to say, I really appreciated how it was collected, the value that I got with the amount of issues in this particular collection of Inferno from the Milestone series. It felt good. It was organized well, and it included all of the main points for the main story. I will buy more Milestone collections in the future if that's the only place that I can possibly get a complete storyline from the X-Men. I'm kind of happy I did, but upset that I did, because now I'm wondering if I should collect them all that way, just like I thought would happen, but I'm not. I'm going to stick to my guns and just get what I need. So what's collected in this particular series here? Well, you've got four main titles. This is a pretty mega event. It has a lot of crossover, not in the way that is done today, but still in a way where similar panels and scenes from one book will also be shown in another book. So that's how tightly plotted they are to affect each other. So the main stories here are found in Uncanny X-Men issues 239 to 243, so there's five issues there. You've got Exterminators 1 to 4, which was a mini series for this particular event, so there's nine issues. And then you have X-Factor issues 36 to 40, as well as an annual, which is another, that's six issues there. And then you had the New Mutants issues 71 to 73, so you've got 10, 15, and then you got 18 issues. If memory serves correct, I'm going based on the Wikipedia page of what was the main issues or titles that were affected by Inferno. Those are definitely the ones that I read in the Milestone collection. I'm not 100% sure about the annual number 4 of X-Factor, but it's more than likely there. So there's 17 to 18 issues collected in this Milestone book, and it's really good. A good collection, I should say. Not every issue, obviously, out of 17 or 18 issues is going to be gold. Of course not. I would say that some of the Exterminators and New Mutant stuff is a little bit not for me, but they do have a pretty big effect on the overall storyline. So let's get into that. So in the main plot, as I'm going to cheat and read my Cole's notes, if you will, there's two demons from Limbo, Sim and Nastur. That's the right way to spell it. And they're planning a demonic invasion of Earth. If you want to put it in simple terms, it's kind of like what you would think of when you were to describe the Ghostbusters, the first Ghostbusters movie. Now, I know you might be thinking, well, then I'll just watch the Ghostbusters movie. That's fine. But in this case, you're dealing with the X-Men and how an invasion of Manhattan would affect all of the Marvel Universe, which to me is much cooler. And in this case, they're the New Mutants. You've got the storyline with the New Mutants and the Exterminators on one end dealing with what these two demon characters are trying to do. And then on the other end, you're dealing with what those same two characters, villains, are doing to X-Factor and the X-Men and how that's trying to advance their plot. But for me, personally, what I enjoyed about the story is what ends up happening to the character. There's a lot of manipulation, but there's a lot of revelation as well in these stories. And moving these characters forward is what I enjoyed the most, especially in the case of the X-Men and Madeline Pryor and Cyclops and Jean Grey and all of that. As well as the first encounter of the Uncanny X-Men realizing that X Factor exist, who exactly they are, and that Jean Grey is actually Jean Grey. It was years in the making. It's kind of hard to understand that when you're reading these books in succession. But when you kind of look at the issue numbers and realize that these have been coming out monthly, there's been years that have gone by, 2 to 3 years worth of storyline in these books, maybe more, that these teams never crisscrossed yet. They've existed in the same universe, being affected by some of the same thematic plots, if you will, like Fall of the Mutants and Mutant Massacre, but they've never crisscrossed with each other, encountered each other, which is really interesting to me. So the culmination of this and seeing it all unfold and what it means and how they all feel is pretty impactful if you are invested in these characters, and that's what you get here. So getting back to the plot, Sim and Nastur, they're planning a demonic invasion of Earth, and their plan revolves around Ileana Rasputin, who's a member of the New Mutants and also the little sister to X-Men Colossus. And her mutant power allows her to open portals and passages between Limbo and Earth. And Nastur casts a spell blocking Ileana's teleportation power, and it traps all the New Mutants in Limbo with Sim, who's taken control of Limbo and all of its hordes and is very intent on killing New Mutants in order to solidify his claim to Limbo. Now, Ileana obviously wanted to save her team and escape. She assumes the entrapment spell was cast by Sim and sees no reason to think that Nastur is on the same side as Sim, manipulating them. So he says to, it advises Ileana, saying, you know what? What? My screen went blank. He says, you can return to Earth by embracing the power that you have here in Limbo completely. She does so. She opens this gateway to Manhattan. She's been manipulated by them, and all hell ensues, pun intended, I guess you can say. Now, at the same time, these hordes of Sim and Nastur have been sent to Earth to collect 12 or 13 children, infants, in order to power whatever plot that they have. I forget exactly what it is that they need to do, but they need 13 infants to empower them in sacrifice. It's very, you know, sort of biblical and yucky, and not the biblical part, but it's just yucky. Well, what these guys are obviously demons. And in the process, they kidnap WizKid, assuming these hordes assume that he's a baby because he's a child. But in fact, he's not an infant. But he is a WizKid is a mutant who is on the Exterminators team here, who has the ability to basically, he's like baby Forge, I guess you could say. Whereas Forge is able to invent anything, the X-Men Forge, or Storm's boyfriend at this point in time. WizKid has the ability to take a calculator and turn it into a time machine. It's very foggy exactly how his power works, but it's useful in the plot. It's kind of silly, which is some of the things that have taken me out of the story. But all in all, it's useful to the plot, as you will see later. And WizKid's been kidnapped, so the Exterminators, their point, these four teenagers who will eventually become part of New Mutants and X-Factor and all these other X-Teams later on, Richter and Boom Boom, and I forget the other characters' names, they're going to rescue WizKid. And in the process, their storylines crisscross with the New Mutants, which there's that one half of the Inferno event that is one particular story involving rescuing Ileana, rescuing WizKid. Colossus is in those books trying to rescue his sister, and that's one half of the story. Now, on the other end, Nastur, the other half of this demonic tag team, he makes a bargain with Madeline Pryor, and we see some of this happening in the previous story that I read and reviewed in the last episode, where Madeline Pryor is captured and in prison on Genosha. You see her talking to Nastur in her subconscious. So their deal is that Nastur makes a deal with Madeline Pryor that he would help her locate her son and manipulate the X-Men into killing the Marauders in exchange for her casting a spell that would make a permanent bridge between Earth and Limbo. So Ileana is able to open these portals and then Madeline Pryor is going to create the bridge, the permanent bridge between them. And we come to find out that Madeline Pryor, upon Jean Grey's death, way back in X-Men issue 138, I think it was, 138 or 137, when she sacrifices herself, the Phoenix Force leaves Jean Grey and then assumes control of Madeline Pryor's, as we come to find out in this storyline, spoilers, clone body. So Madeline Pryor all this time has had some latent powers that are now coming to fruition. Let me get back to my Cole's notes here. So in order to infect the X-Men with this infernal spell, Nastur, this other half of the demon team, he alters the X-Men computer system so that now they can use them to locate the Marauders. Now again, the X-Men are located in Australia during these years, so they have a mutant Gateway, I think his name is Gateway, who opens portals for them to be able to travel to places conveniently. And the X-Men, now that they have this information of the Marauders, the infernal spell infects them in the sense that they have no problem killing the Marauders. Where in the past, the X-Men, other than maybe Wolverine and a few others in very, very tense situations, well, Wolverine would kill anybody, but other X-Men, it would take very, very extreme situations for them to allow a life to be lost. But now they're doing it gleefully. The only one who isn't affected, of course, is Colossus, and we know that he has his crossover into the New Mutant books trying to rescue his sister, but he's the one that isn't directly affected by this infernal spell. So as he learns what happens to Eliana, he concludes that he can only free his fellow X-Men from Inferno's influence by saving her. So she's the key to stopping all of this mess. Let me continue here. On the other end of this storyline is the Madeline Pryor story, and she comes to find out her origin exactly. Not only has she made a deal with this demon Nastur in order to retrieve her son and to eliminate the Marauders, she also realizes, this is the other part of the storyline that isn't necessarily involved or affected by Inferno, but you've got Mr. Sinister, who is a main villain in this storyline, who has destroyed Xavier's mansion while Magneto was away dealing with this event. He's gone there and... because Magneto at this point in time is the headmaster of the New Mutants. Xavier is not in these books. He's still somewhere off in space with his space girlfriend, what's her name, Lalandra of the Shire Empire. So he's not involved in any of these storylines. So Madeline Pryor learns that Sinister, in fact, is her, not her, her father, but her creator, if you will. And his whole purpose, as we come to find out, was to manipulate the lineage of the Jean and Scott Summers line, and to make sure that they conceive a child, and that child would be the most important, powerful, genetically not modified, but the mutant with the X gene, who with those two family lines combined, now the untapped potential in this child can go anywhere. So that's Sinister's plot here, and as time goes on, we find out more about Sinister's background. But here we really are now digging deep into Madeline Pryor's history, her psyche, how everything, all of this revelation is affecting her, and what this means for how she's going to continue approaching her relationship and views of Scott Summers and Jean Grey and the rest of the X-Men, as well as wanting to eliminate the Marauder. She's just going down this horrible dark rabbit hole. And at the same time, while all that's happening, you've got Manhattan that is being possessed and overtaken by these hordes. And the funny part about it is you got these issues in New Mutants, specifically where you see New York being infected, where the subway system is now sentient and mailboxes are eating people, and the Empire State Building, which is kind of the capital of all of the center point of this entire event, is now growing and becoming larger and becoming sentient, and the city is just going about their business like, hey, this is New York, what else is new, crazy things happens here. So as the story continues, you see obviously the demons are defeated. I'm not going to get into all of those details. Certain things happen to Ileana Rasputin. She doesn't necessarily sacrifice her life. She does, but she doesn't. There's always that plot twist. You've got plot twists that are taking place with Madeline Pryor and Jean Grey, how they mentally sync up, and there's that's where a lot of the revelations occur. And one of my favorite moments in this book, and the huge credit I got to give to Mark Silvestri with some of these splash pages where the X-Men and X-Factor encounter for the first time, and Wolverine really wants to know if it's the real Jean Grey, and you've got this poster-worthy splash page of the two different X teams encountering each other for the first time in this huge mega event with big consequence and ramifications. And I will say that the Uncanny X-Men issues is the ones I really wanted to get to, of course, with the X-Factor included, because they tie in nicely with each other. But overall, this is a mega event with a lot of things, a lot of moving pieces, a lot of characters that needed to be used, introduced, and also pushed forward on the checkerboard or the chessboard, if you will, of this X family. And I feel like they did a pretty good job of it. I would recommend it if you're an X-Men completist. You definitely should read these, especially the Uncanny X-Men issues. The rest of the things that happen in it just add context to the story, help you understand exactly what it is that's happening. The overall plot of the overtaking of Manhattan and the Naster and Sim, the joke about it is that people actually, a lot of the people who undergo the event feel that it was just one big hallucination. But what isn't changed is what happens to the characters, what happens to Jean and Scott and Ileana and Colossus and the rest of the X-Men, where they're left at the end of this event, and who exactly Mr. Sinister has been this whole time. And, you know, I got to give credit where credit's due. I don't know if I said it at the beginning of this episode. I know I must have said it on those previous attempts that I tried to record this. But I got to give credit to Louise Simonson, because she wrote the majority of this event. It's often considered to be an X-Men event, which it is. But she wrote the four issues of Exterminators, the three issues of New Mutants included here, as well as the six issues of X-Factor. She did the majority of the work here. And at times, of course, her writing lends itself more to that juvenile, childish reader. Characters like WizKid, of course. But moving the plot forward, I think she really sticks the landing. And her contribution to this entire event can't be overlooked or made to be like, well, it's really a Chris Claremont story. Not so much. This is Louise Simonson really at the helm in the driver's seat of this, and she did a good job. And this story still is referenced today when you think of major X-Men characters such as Nathan Summers, the baby that, you know, is at the center point, focal point of much of this story, as well as the relationship between, like I said before, these characters. The manipulation and revelation that you get in this story is pretty huge. So if you want to read it, like I said, the X-Men Milestones is a great place to have it all collected for you in a way that is organized, where the storyline makes sense. It is a lot of books included in it, which is a good thing. I think it's worth the money in regards to how much is bound together here, what it costs to read it all. I think is worth the money. And I would say that some of it, again, may be hard to get through just because of the era, but the overall story, especially when you get to the X-Factor and Uncanny X-Men portion of it, I think is some of the best X-Men stuff that I've read thus far. So that's my take on it. Now, when I say thus far, I'm saying in my retroactively reading all of these things going forward. I don't know where may rank up with some of the things I'm going to be reading next, but you'll have to keep listening to the Road Reports to find out. So you could leave us a review at iTunes. That always helps. You can follow us on Facebook. You can email us at caveofsolitude@outlook.com. And of course, stay tuned for more episodes in the upcoming weeks of whether it's Road Report, where I give you some reviews, whether I have some guests on here, which I more than likely will for sure, and as well as some interviews that I'm trying to planned for the upcoming weeks. So stay tuned for those things. Thank you again for listening. I'm your host, Eric Anthony. And wherever you listen to this episode, whether you're walking, whether you're driving to work, on the subway, whatever the case may be, I hope you enjoyed yourself. Thank you once again for listening. Stay tuned for more. We will be back soon.